saw my baby then. She was stretched out on that long white table, so young, so sweet, so fair. Well, let her go, God bless her. Well, wherever her soul may be, she could have searched this whole world over.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Haunt Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I am your humble host, Janine Mercer, voted most likely to be burned at the stake, and I am joined here by my equally humble co-host, Katie McCauley.
Hello again. It was so nice to speak with you guys the last time. Glad you brought me back again.
Hello again. Voted most likely to be thrown into an 18th century asylum for reading a book.
I agree, yes.
Yeah. Sounds good. So how you been?
I know. I turned 25 yesterday, so that's good. And then this week I actually got in a car accident, but I'm all right now. Thank you for driving me all around Milwaukee to collect my stuff in my vehicle and sign papers and go get fruit by the foot,
man.
Which was very important.
Yeah, man. Very, it's necessary.
Yeah.
When dealing with traumatic events.
Yeah, so you need some high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah. So aside from the smashy.
Yeah.
Everything's been.
Yeah, I had a great birthday. I spent it sitting on my bed drinking tea. Mm-hmm. With my friend watching the show Face Off. So, did you have a nice Halloween?
I did. We went over to our neighbor's house. Our neighbor Penny lives right across the alley.
Mm-hmm.
So, we went over there and we took over her house. Because she gets trick-or-treaters and we don't.
Ah.
Because we're on the main drag.
Yeah, there's so, not traffic for little kids.
Yeah, they're not keen. So, they don't come over here. The wife was saying, though, that what we might do next year is we might advertise that we're giving out full-size candy bars.
Oh, wow. That'll bring in the crowd.
And then decorate the house. And then just wait.
Yes. Without signs.
Wait for the onslaught. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that would work. If I was a kid and someone's it's going to be a full-size, Snickers, I'd be I'm there.
Dude, I used to walk 45 minutes to the top portion of this one street that I used to trick-or-treat on when I was, nine.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was always we don't have to go to that house first. I said, yes, we do. He said, we don't. I said, yes, we do. He said, why? I said, they give out full-size Snickers every year.
Wow.
And last year, they were king-sized.
Oh, yeah, then priorities.
Because the guy worked for a distribution company.
Mm-hmm.
So, the quote-unquote expired candy. Even if it's one day expired, they can't sell it.
Yeah.
So he'd just give it all out for Halloween.
Awesome.
It was pretty fantastic.
You got, a good connection there.
Yep. Oh, God. Okay. Getting attacked by a back scratcher. That's very spooky.
Oh, yes.
All right. So let's see. What else is going on? I got some good reviews for the last episode.
Awesome.
We had some good downloads. I would again like to encourage everybody to find us on iTunes. Leave us a 5-star review. Your 5-star reviews are a huge help to us. Lets us know how we're doing, how we can improve. If you want to send us any subjects, any topics, your favorite folklore tales, your crazy haunted stories about shit going bump in the night, send that to us as well at hauntheadscast@gmail.com.
Oh, yeah. Always there to, read real-life stories. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, God. Well, we just had our very first mini-sode.
Oh, yeah. I listened to that.
So I read all these haunted stories. And, I gotta say, there's some people out there that have some real good stories.
Yes.
Yeah, and, super spooky.
Yeah, definitely not ones you listen to, alone.
Right.
Or you do, if that's what
well,
you do.
Well, I mean, if that's your thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally enjoy sitting around, watching creepy movies by myself in a dark house.
Oh, I don't do that.
Oh, no?
When I was younger, My parents sat me down and said, no matter what you do, don't watch The Ring. So I went out and, of course, got it.
What did you do? I watched
The Ring. And, oh my gosh, I was terrified of our TV for so long after that. I can't watch anything scary by myself anymore because we had one of those, like, entertainment center things, like, where the doors would close over the TV at night.
Oh.
And I used to actually, like, tie it shut with a
rope. Oh, God.
So she wouldn't come out and, like, attack me. So
That's terrible.
I only watch scary things in well-lit rooms with many other people around.
How old were you?
Oh, my gosh. Well, when did it come out?
I don't even know.
I think I must have been, I'm guessing, around 11 or 12.
Yeah.
I just know that I was way too young, and I never would have watched it if I hadn't been told specifically
not to do it. Yeah, my dad told me I didn't want to watch The Firestarter with Drew Barrymore when she's like 4 or 5. She's like this tiny little kid, and she can set fires with the power of her mind.
Oh, my.
Really affected me for a really long time. Like, super long time. It was like months before I recovered.
What about all the freaky movies that they're actually made for children? Mm. Like, some of those are way more terrifying than, like, full-on horror movies I watch now. Like, Jumanji?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Like, when he got sucked into the board game, that terrified me as a child. I don't know.
Jumanji wasn't so bad, but... I mean, when I was growing up, it was like Labyrinth with David Bowie and The Dark Crystal, Jim Henson's The Dark Crystal, Return to Oz.
Returned with her headless,
where she's going. God! She goes into the room and there's all these heads in these glass caps.
Yeah. Oh my God, no. Actually, Labyrinth is my favorite movie in the whole library.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know every single song.
Yeah, I recently, I purchased, what was it? I think there was a couple movies that we bought for my niece and nephew, and one of them was Pete's Dragon, which is a fantastic film.
I haven't seen that in so long.
And the other one was Bedknobs and Broomsticks, and I got Bedknobs and Broomsticks because I love Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Like, me and Angela are peeps.
Yeah.
Like, anything that Angela Lansbury has ever done is my jam. MVP. Yeah, she's fantastic. So I was like, well, I'm going to get in Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Mm-hmm.
So I get in Bedknobs and Broomsticks. And I go over to their house one day, and we're babysitting. And the kids go down for their nap. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to watch me some Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Because I hadn't seen it since I was, like, 10 or, like, 9 or 10 years old. I was like, yeah, I'm going to sit down and watch some Bedknobs and Broomsticks. I turn that shit on, and, like, halfway through, they're, like, fighting Nazis. And I was like, wait a second. Were there Nazis? Like, I don't remember not. And they're like, up on the hill, you know, like, trying to make it look like. Yeah, I was like, they're fighting Nazis. I bought him a movie about Angela Lansbury fighting Nazis. That's, like,
they win? That's the important question.
They did win.
Then see, it's instilling values in them. Like, why should Tennessee see bad?
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
they did win. But I was like, wow, my niece and nephew are watching movies about fighting Nazis. That's good.
Yeah, there's a lot of ones where you watch them when you're a kid and you remember some parts and not others. And I always hate it then when you're showing someone. Like, oh my gosh, I watched this movie. I love this movie. And then you're showing it to them, and then something happens that you don't remember, and it's, like, super, like, not politically correct or something, and you're like, oh my gosh. Like, and you feel like you have to pause it and be like, by the way, I just want to note here that I did not remember this scene happening and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's always interesting. What about, Nemo's Adventures in Slumberland? Did you ever watch that one?
Oh, I never watched that one.
Like, there's a giant... like nightmare thing that's made out of like black goo that like sucks people's up and
Dude, when I was growing up, we watched the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory,
the tunnel scene,
and the tunnel scene with like somebody cutting the head off a chicken.
Yeah.
And like I didn't realize that stuff was happening when I was younger, but I watch it now and I'm like, wow, that is an acid trip.
Yeah.
And wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. No way.
Yeah. No.
Mm-mm. Yeah, they made movies quote unquote, four children.
Yeah.
In the 80s. Yeah, that's what they did.
Yeah.
It's like they didn't know children at all.
Yeah, they're like, I have a vague idea of what children like.
What was the other one? Return to Witch Mountain?
Oh, yeah, where they were like, the kids were aliens and they had to,
I feel like it was, but that one freaked me out too.
Yeah. For me, it was mostly Jumanji. That's the one that traumatized me as a child. I still don't think I've recovered. I haven't watched it.
Even like, with Robin Williams?
Well, he's, like, fine, but what about the freaking, like Colonel Mustard from, fucking Clue? Pops up and just, like, trying to, like, murder everyone. And then, like, the giant mosquitoes, like...
Oh, yeah.
It's terrifying. Yeah, and, like, the plants that like, shoot poison darts. Like, no.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, my 10-year-old sister was like, oh, the new Jumanji came out. Do you want to watch it? And I was like, no. Hell no.
No, thank you. Yeah, no. We're good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have enough nightmares for the rest of my life. We're good.
Oh, yeah.
all right. So, let's see what we have today. I tried to pick something that was sort of appropriate for Halloween, but also just, like, good old-fashioned spooky.
Ooh.
Like, kind of taking us back to, like, our spooky roots. So I decided to do the story of Jan Bryant Bartell, or Janice Bryant Bartell. She was the wife of Fred G. Bartell, who he actually owned a bunch of restaurants in New York and Manhattan.
Okay.
And they lived in a house I never know if it's Greenwich or Greenwich. I think it's Greenwich Village.
That sounds more right.
Yeah. Yeah. People from New York, please don't be mad at me. I don't know.
Yes.
I'm just a stupid Canadian. I don't know. but yeah, so they live in Greenwich Village in New York, and they experience a lot of like weird and creepy shit in their house,
mm-hmm.
but Fred is not really on board with it. Jan is the one that experiences the bulk of it, and mm-hmm. her small dog.
Oh no, not a dog.
Yeah, there's a dog, yeah. But yeah, Fred is just basically like, dude, like, this is not actually happening.
It's the wind. I think you're a little
paranoid. Yeah, like, it's the wind, or the house is old, it's settling, whatever. So he always seemed to have an explanation for it, but she felt that there was something else there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I decided to tackle that. What have you got on tap?
Okay, well, I was really excited because yesterday was Halloween and mm-hmm. my birthday, so I kind of went more for, like, the history of Halloween and some lore around it.
Yeah.
And then just, like, a little sprinkle of Wicca on top of it.
Yeah,
Like, Samhain, just gonna...
For good measure.
Yeah, just a little bit of that on top, so
cool.
I'm gonna talk about that, like, mm-hmm. and I have, like, a nice, like, lore story and some history. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I got for you today.
Yeah, neat. Yeah, I'm excited.
Yes.
Okay, so I thought to figure out who goes first, because I went first last time.
Yes.
And I wasn't sure if you wanted to necessarily jump into the shoes right away, but I wanted to give you the opportunity.
Okay, let's see.
So...
You're pulling out a card of a... Okay.
Okay, so the game is called That's It. And the aim of the game is you read a statement. So, like, for example, here's a question. A popular berry. So you have to list off all of the popular berries you can think of. Mm-hmm. And if you get stumped, then you lose. So that's it is blueberry.
Oh, okay.
Right? So if you said blueberry, then that means you win right away. So I figured what we would do is we would each pick a card. So, like...
Okay,
so I have a card.
All right. Okay.
And then I figured we would each choose, like, one of the statements. And then we would go back and forth until one of us got stumped or one of us had That's It.
Okay.
All right. So, what do you have?
Something associated with elephants.
Trunks. A loud zoo animal.
Lion.
Let's see. Ivory?
No.
Hmm.
Elephant?
No.
Hasi.
Big flappy ears?
No.
Hmm.
I was about to say giraffes, but giraffes actually don't make any noise.
yes, they do. They suck on the wall.
They what?
They suck on the wall. So it's like...
Ew. I was happier when I thought that they didn't make any noise. gorillas.
Nope. Memory?
No.
Like an elephant never forgets.
Bears.
No. Their feet?
No.
God, what the hell?
I know so many animals make noise. Chimpanzees.
Well, that I think is a type of...
Monkey?
Monkey. Okay. Yeah, so that's it. So you win.
Okay, so what does that mean?
So that means that you can either tell me to go first or you can go first.
Okay.
Whichever one you would like.
How about we just try me going first? See how it goes.
I think it'll be fine.
Okay, because this is... I believe in it. We've got this.
Oh, and what are we drinking here? We're drinking something very festive for our Halloween episode. It is... What is it? Ginger and blood orange...
like sparkling
soda. Yeah, like sparkling soda. It's pink.
Yeah, I like it because it's not too sweet. I don't like...
Yeah, it's a little tart.
Yeah, well...
I like it.
The cupcakes I brought were really sweet, though. Maybe like vegan cupcakes.
Oh, yeah. Katie made vegan cupcakes that had squash in them. And they were fabulous.
Yeah, I have a friend who does not eat enough vegetables, and she came to visit for my birthday. So I, like, made cupcakes that contain squash just so, like, I could, like, make sure she had some vegetables. Like, ha ha ha,
you
I
tricked
her into eating squash. Okay, so let's start just by talking about my birthday a little bit.
Okay.
Okay, so Halloween, which is very highly linked to Samhain, which is how you pronounce something that looks like it should be Samhain.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, like when I first got into Wicca, I was like, Samhain. Mm-hmm. And other people would look at me like, okay. And then I heard someone talk about it for the first time instead of read someone talking about it.
Yep.
And I was like, oh my gosh, I have been saying this wrong the entire time.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Samhain is actually pronounced Samhain. As a note, so that cool. You don't do what I did for a very long time and pronounce it completely wrong.
Right.
So the interesting thing is that they're actually Halloween and Samhain are not the same. They happen at the same time, and as time has gone on, they've somewhat, like, melded together, like, into a goo. Like, so, like, they're kind of, like, a glop together holiday.
Mm.
But originally, they were completely different. Because, like, Samhain, see, I still want to say Samhain.
Mm-hmm.
Samhain is actually, like, a Celtic holiday that is all about, like, it marks the halfway point between, like, the light half of the year and the dark half of the year.
So it's kind of like a daylight savings for Celtic people.
Well, yeah, a bit. And kind of like, it's not, like, because people will say, like, oh, it's like the Celtic New Year, and then other people be like, no, it's not. But it says, yeah, it's like, it's a like a transition. It's like, it marks that transition. It marks the end of the harvest and the beginning of, like, cold and that kind of stuff starting. So, here, I will read something, like, because I was researching all nice, and I looked at, like, I looked at about 5 different places, actually, before I found one that said it in words that made sense.
Right.
Because sometimes, like, when you're going for, like, metaphysical or anything slightly witchy.
All of this trans-empirical stuff that's all floaty and ethereal.
I call it, like, la-la-la, like, la-la-la-la. Right. Language, and I just, that's not how I learned best. So, like, Newgrange.com actually really talked about kind of how, like, they were linked. Okay. Mm. So, like, millions of children and adults will participate in the fun of Halloween. So, and few people know, like, about its root in Samhain.
Okay.
So, in about 2,000 years ago, Samhain was the division of the year between the lighter half and the darker half.
Mm.
The division... was kind of like when our world and, like, the other world, or, like, the afterlife is the thinnest, like, divide.
Right.
So, like, a lot of people choose this as a time to, like, honor their ancestors and, like, think about, like, family members that they've lost because
right.
it's at that, like, transitory time.
Hmm.
And since it's so thin, it allows spirits to, like, pass through.
Mm-hmm.
So people that are still on our plane of existence
right.
meander on over.
Well, and today as well is All Souls Day.
Yes.
Correct?
Ahaha.
Or the Dia de los Muertos.
Yeah. I think that Dia de los Muertos, yeah.
Mm.
The day, yeah.
And day of the Dead?
Yeah.
Mm.
So, Christianity incorporated the honoring of the dead into the Christian calendar with All Saints or All Hallows Day.
Mm.
So, Halloween is Hallows Eve. Christianity had it be like as a time for people to honor and remember saints.
Okay.
And how, like, because they're hallows, like they're the saints, and how they influenced and how important they were for, like, the Christian faith. And then, like, just like, you know, Christian people, like,
right.
do a lot of
mm-hmm.
that type of stuff. Mm. And it's followed by, like, All Souls Day. So it was like you honor all the saints, then you, like, honor all the people.
Right.
And the Christian faith. And it was, people wore a lot of costumes back in the day when this started
mm-hmm.
to ward off any harmful spirits that, like, were out and about
mm-hmm.
at the same time as, like, the souls were passing over.
Yeah. So essentially, like, scaring away the bad, the evil spirits.
Yeah. While yeah. celebrating the
mm-hmm.
positive and, like, everyone that was, like, good.
Right.
And had died that year, and
hmm.
so on. So when Irish people moved to America, everything kind of squished together at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So the Wiccan / pagan tradition of celebrating, like, the change of the seasons and that, like,
mm-hmm.
Christianity matched up with it, with their, like, celebration
mm-hmm.
of similar things, and that's when they kind of just came together like a giant, like, squishy ball of October 31st, woohoo,
right.
fun,
yep.
Katie's birthday.
That was when they decided that it would just be Katie's birthday.
Yes.
And
they,
poof.
Yeah, they were so excited for my birthday, they celebrated it before I was born. Okay, so in Wicca, this on this day, October 31st, is when, like, the horned god dies to be born again at
mm-hmm.
Yule.
Yep.
And part of what I really like about not even just the Wiccan thing, but the Christian thing is it's a very big time thinking about, like, the cyclical nature of life and how death isn't
mm-hmm.
something to be afraid of,
mm-hmm.
which is funny because
right.
then you take this holiday that's all about scaring everyone
right.
and, like, being terrifying and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which I think is actually, like, people's way of trying to, like, express, like, and deal with, like, fears
right.
that they may have. And that might be, like, my psychology degree.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
analyzing why
yeah.
would people do this. But
I always forget that you have a psychology degree. We should really tackle, like, some paranormal stuff in regards to, like, the psychology of
Ooh.
The paranormal. And
oh,
it would probably be pretty interesting.
Oh, definitely.
You know?
Like, maybe after, yeah,
yeah,
like, I'll definitely, for that, because I want to do my psych degree proud, I'll have to research a bit more. Like, if we're going
right.
to tackle something like that, I'll want to, like, have some APA
yep. yep.
sources. Like,
a few footnotes.
Yeah.
yeah. We'll have some footnotes.
But,
cool.
yeah, so it was very much shocking, just, like, the whole, everything about it is just how death shouldn't be feared.
Mm.
And people, like, dress up to, like, scare each other, just, like, because all the oogity-boogity things are out while all of the good and positive spirits are out and about, too. And like I said, it's a really good time to, like, honor people who came before you. So
right.
this can be, like, your actual ancestors. Like, it can be, like,
mm-hmm.
your great-great-great-great-grandma.
Right.
Or it can just be, like, in general, like, the humans that had to be born over, like, and over for you to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I actually, around this time, like, at my apartment, I didn't think I showed you, but I actually have, like, just a tiny little ancestor altar.
Mm.
And I just have, like, a little cup of water and some tobacco
and
a couple coins. Because, like, it's just remembering how you wouldn't be here if it weren't for the people that lived and died
right.
before you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just kind of a bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good time to, like, if you're into any type of, what I'm trying to say, like, divination, like, it's a good time to, like, do that, because everything is, like, really close together, and, like, during the summer, it's kind of more like everything's really separated. Like, we are alive and doing our thing, and other, like, entities and stuff are alive doing their thing. And, like, as we, as you know and I know, there's spots where that's not as true, but it's kind of like Halloween makes a lot more places be haunted and, like, have that type of energy. Yeah. It just, like, spreads that love that, like, is in several specific locations. It just... a lot bigger.
Now, in terms of divination, can you kind of explain a little bit, like, what divination is and what maybe it involves a little bit? Just quickly, not like, you know,
I'm not gonna,
Cliff Notes version.
Well, we will, but
I mean,
we're
probably a big question.
We are going to put, like, a side note that this is my interpretation that I have not, like, researched, like... Well, I have a lot, but this is just going to be my viewpoint on it. So basically, divination is just a means of trying to ascertain what's going on around you. Mm. And a lot of people use it to try and see what's going to happen in the future. I never use it for that. I use it to see, just, it's kind of like, it's not like someone giving you a map with directions. Like, it's like, and it's tarot cards, or you can use, like, rune stones, or you can, sometimes people actually just, like, meditate and, like, they scry, which is you look at a flat surface or into water or something until your mind just kind of shifts, and then
like that episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer where Giles is drugging Buffy because she has to go through this trial and she has to find the center of this crystal scrying.
Exactly. Like, it's that altered state of consciousness, or trying to...
I'm trying to find pop culture references.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
To, like, validate it for myself, but...
Oh, totally understandable. But some people kind of think of it as, like, a yes-no thing. Like, you can use, like, what are they called? Like, they dangle.
Oh, like pendulums?
Pendulum. Or... I was thinking pentacle. I was like, that's the wrong word. But blaming it on the car accident. I'm still sore. That's why I can't remember.
She does have a mild concussion, everybody. But she's still here.
I am. but you can have a pendulum, and you can ask it, like, yes or no questions. And you could do something more like a tarot card reading. And that's more like broad strokes. Like, you can be like, for example, something that I will do is if someone that I love is struggling and I don't know how to help them, I will ask my tarot deck with my friend's permission, because I never ask my deck anything, like, without everyone knowing what I'm doing, because I want to respect where everyone's at. So, but, like, I'll ask my tarot deck, like, how can I best help this person? And then I will do a reading like that, and I'll get cards that say things like, sometimes it's best to just be there silently. So that there's someone to listen. And then I'll get something like about taking a trip, and maybe I just need to go on a car ride with them so that, like, we're alone and they feel like they can open up and talk to me. So, but, like, going back to, like, Samhain, like, this type of divination, it's especially good where you could be able to see into your past lives, if you believe into that, or into what is coming in the future, because everything is so close and kind of intermingled. So it would be a good time. Some people do other types of specific to this holiday divination, which is apple readings. You can take an apple peel and you peel it, and it drops into a thing of water, and it will form a letter of the alphabet that will be the first letter of your true love's name. Is like a very...
So kind of like reading tea leaves, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's all...
See what your true... What is it your true love's occupation is going to be?
Yeah.
I think my friends did that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just... It's a very interesting thing, but yeah.
Yeah.
For example, like, yesterday, I did like a birthday / Samhain reading.
Right.
Just kind of about generally, hey, what's coming in the next year? Just like, what lessons... Like, am I going to learn? What did I learn last year? And it's just like, it helps clarify things. It's like, if you're looking at things and you kind of know where you're going. It's just sometimes it's kind of like putting on glasses. Hmm. So it's just, oh, it defines a couple things that you may have had trouble
right.
putting into words.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, moving on to the last bit that I have. I've always been fascinated as why the hell do we associate certain stuff with days and like holidays
yeah.
and shit like that? Like, mm-hmm. why? Like, why is there like an Easter bunny and eggs? Why is that the thing? So I am going to just talk just a little bit about why we associate certain things with October 31st and kind of like one real good piece of lore and then just some background information as to a couple things, just like this is why.
Right.
So to start with, we're going to start off with jack-o'-lanterns.
Oh, cool.
And a lot of people may or may not know actually the story of Stingy Jack, but I found a nice just like summary of it on this, oh my gosh, it was the cutest little website called Pumpkin Nook. And it was like all this like Halloween-y stuff, and I was just like, oh my gosh, it's so cute.
Cool.
But so I just want to go through that real quick.
Yeah.
And
so now Stingy Jack is also known sometimes as Saucy Jack.
Yes. Jack has many, many emotions.
Yes.
And, well, adjectives maybe like that describe him.
Right.
He has many things.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is one just story about why people started having jack-o'-lanterns, which is that Stingy Jack was a miserable old drunk who took pleasure in playing tricks on just about everyone. Family, friends, his mother, and even the devil himself. One day, he tricked the devil into climbing up an apple tree. After the devil climbed up the tree, Stingy Jack hurriedly placed crosses around the trunk of the tree. Unable to touch a cross, the devil was stuck in the tree. Stingy Jack made the devil promise him not to take his soul when he died. Once the devil promised not to take his soul, Stingy Jack removed the crosses, and the devil climbed down out of the apple tree. Many years later, Jack died. He went to the pearly gates of heaven and was told by St. Peter that he was mean and cruel and had led a miserable, worthless life on earth. He was not allowed to enter heaven. He then went down to hell. The devil kept his promise and would not allow him to enter hell because he refused to take his soul.
Yeah.
Now Jack was scared. He had nowhere to go, but had to wander about forever in the dark netherworld between heaven and hell. He asked the devil how he could leave as there was no light. The devil tossed him an ember from the flames of hell to help Stingy Jack light his way. Jack had a turnip with him. It was one of his favorite foods, and he always carried one with him. He hollowed out the turnip and placed the ember the devil had given him inside the turnip. From that day forward, Stingy Jack roamed the earth without a resting place, lighting his way as he went with his jack-o'-lantern. On All Hallows' Eve, the Irish hollowed out turnips, rutabagas, gourds, potatoes, and beets. They placed a light in them to ward off evil spirits and keep Stingy Jack away.
Yep.
And when they came to America, they realized that pumpkins were a heck of a lot easier to carve than a turnip, and they transitioned away from it.
Yeah, well, and those turnips, when they're carved, they're horrifying.
Oh my god, yes. Like, you know, those shrunken apple heads.
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it reminds me of.
There was one on Facebook the other day, and I was like, oh god, that is... I mean, but next year now I want to try to carve one.
Oh yeah, well, you gotta
to see if I can do it, yeah.
I actually carved my first pumpkin with you. Okay, so then we're almost done. But I have just a couple other things. So, black cats. Why do we associate black cats with witches, and more specifically, with Halloween? Do you want to know?
I do want to know.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So, during, like, you know, the Pilgrim time frame of everything, when like all the Salem witch trials and things were going on, witches were thought to have familiars. Cats were one of the most common familiars. Each familiar type that a witch was thought to have had different properties associated with it.
Okay.
Like that, they would say that the witch was using to, like, better serve, like, her dark lord or whatever.
Mm.
And cats were thought to be able to cross between our world and the spiritual world. Oh. And that black cats were the most effective and efficient mm-hmm. at doing that. Yeah. So, on the holiday that is all about crossing over from our, like, plane to another plane.
Right.
The idea of, like, the witches and, like, the black cat making that crossing, leading souls over, bringing souls back, it just became extremely popular mm-hmm. and until it became commercialized because America.
Well, you know.
Yeah. And then I loved this thing. Like, I was looking into some of the other stuff, and I loved one of the reasons that I got, because it was so simple.
Mm.
I was like, why do people decorate with, like, apples and pumpkins and stuff like that? And do you know why? Because it's harvest and they're in season. And people were poor and they had to decorate with what they had.
Right.
So they decorated with apples and gourds and leaves and berries that were in season. And I was like,
yeah.
I appreciate that so much because that's just so logical.
Yeah.
It just,
yeah.
So we now know a bit more about Halloween and Samhain.
Yeah.
Not Samhain. Samhain.
Samhain.
I just felt so, like, when I realized, I didn't know because I read. That's how I learned about Wicca. I read and read and read. So it looks like it should be Samhain.
Mm.
But it's not. Okay, now I'm very ready. I want to hear all about your spooky stuff and things.
Okay. I wanted to start by reading a page or so from Jan Bartel's novel, Spindrift. It's called Spindrift Spray from a Psychic Sea.
Ooh,
try saying that three times fast.
Alliteration. A lot of alliteration going on there.
Yeah, she was big into that. Like Plotinus, I live in two worlds, those of the seen and the unseen. And being aware that in neither does anyone make it alone, I therefore extend my gratitude to a personal trinity. Fred G. Bartel, husband and reformed skeptic. Herbert E. Rockefeller, might sound familiar to some people, friend and companion mystic. Both in their own way have come to an understanding of the poet Yeats. When supernatural events begin, a man first doubts his own testimony. But when they repeat themselves again and again, he doubts all human testimony. And Samuel Langhorne Clemens, if that name sounds familiar, that is Mark Twain.
Oh.
Mark Twain was his pen name. The mysterious stranger in my life. I have feasted on his books. I own his steamboat pilot's license. I share his Sagittarian star. And until recently, I lived in his townhouse in Greenwich Village. Now, in the year 1973, I dare to write what he, in 1878, quote, never published because I judged that people would only laugh at it and think I was joking. JBB.
Ooh.
So, I do have another small section that I'm going to read you guys, because this book is actually, it's a little difficult to find. It's also a little expensive to purchase because it's not like they're going to, you know, print any more copies. As is the case with many of the pieces that I present on this podcast, I like to set a mood. So I'm going to set a mood. Shadowy figures in the corner, strange noises in the night, and a little dog that senses unseen and unearthly presences. This, dear reader, is only a glimpse into the life that was the haunted reality of Janice Jan Bryant Bartel. Bartel was a poet, lecturer, and off-Broadway actress, and she appeared in such plays as Bell Hook and Candle and Night Must Fall. Her poetry was also published in several magazines, so she was quite the talented lady. Bartel's experiences prompted her to write a detailed account of her time at 14 West 10th Street in New York. As I said, that's titled Spindrift, Spray from a Psychic Sea. I managed to find a copy of this book at a reasonable price. The copies generally range anywhere from $40 to $150.
Oh, my goodness.
This one was closer to the $40 range. It doesn't have the jacket, sadly, there's a photo of her on the book jacket.
Oh.
And she was a very beautiful, elegant lady of the time. And she looks very haunted.
Ooh.
Like, there's something in her eyes that just tells you that, like, she has that I've been through some shit look on her face. So, yeah, I'm sad that it doesn't have the book jacket, but...
you can make your own book jacket.
It's... Yeah, I could probably print... Honestly, I could probably print one. But, yeah, I might actually print a picture of her and slip it inside the book.
I'm totally going to Google it when we're done.
Yeah, just to keep them together. And it's really interesting, too. Ever since I purchased it, I have been... I'm drawn to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting.
I'm going
to
touch it.
I'm not generally drawn to books like that, but there's...
It has a very interesting energy. Where did you get it from?
It came from New York, from a resale store. They bought it for $8 from somewhere, and I got it from, you know, whatever, you jerks. But yeah, I just have been, like, carrying it around. Like, today, I brought it to work with me, and I put it in my bag.
Yeah.
Just so I could have it near me.
Well, I feel like...
It was interesting.
Sometimes our connections to like the supernatural can just be like very tactile. Like, it's just something that you want to hold on to. So that makes sense. It has a very interesting vibe for sure.
Yeah, there's something about the it has an interesting texture too. And there's like you know, it's raised. The text is raised on the spine.
It's also a beautiful color.
So I just it's kind of like this turquoisey kind of a green color.
Yeah, and you and I both love books. Like,
Well, and it smells fucking amazing because it's ancient.
Yeah.
So it smells like vinegar and bookworms. And...
Oh, yes. There is nothing better than the smell of books.
Yeah, so it's good stuff. But yeah, I found that I'm really drawn to it. I haven't read it yet, so I'm gonna do that in the next couple of weeks. I'm going to consume it slowly because it's actually not very thick.
Mm-hmm.
There's not really too much here. But yeah, so in the next couple of weeks, I'll read it. It hasn't gotten terribly good reviews.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people that say that it's very indulgent. It seems like she's really...
Laying it on thick?
Kind of, yeah, overemphasizing certain aspects of it.
Mm.
So yeah, I wonder how I'm going to respond to it.
Let me know.
But the energy of it is interesting.
Yeah, it's always interesting with old books. Like, I just wonder who else has read them. Like, who else has just, like, picked it up and had it and
read
it and carried it, brought to their work, maybe.
Well, and I mean, it was printed the same time that they were all printed.
Yeah, so...
So it makes me wonder... I don't know. I actually don't know who published it.
Yeah.
I didn't check to see who published it, because if she went to a smaller publishing company, it is totally possible... Okay, Hawthorne Books in New York. It's entirely possible that, you know, she had so many copies made.
Yeah.
And then she picked up the copies.
Ooh, that would be really cool to have like that.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can order prints of books to, like, give to your friends or whatever if you don't want to professionally publish them.
Mm-hmm.
You can self-publish. So I don't know if this was professionally published or if she self-published it, but... I am wondering if Bartel's accounts are so far-fetched that they simply can't be believed, or if the language is a turnoff.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it is quite wordy and wandering. I thought that adding her story, though, to the ever-growing Haunthead's collection of creepy fare would be entirely appropriate, given the Halloween season is upon us.
Always, yes.
So, without further delay, it's time to cuddle into a corner of the sofa, snuggle down into a blanket, which is funny because you're doing it right now.
I literally just pulled up my fuzzy blanket, so I'm all ready for this.
Yeah, snuggle down into your blanket and chew off all of your fingernails. It's 1957, and Jan Bryant Bartel has just moved into the top floor apartment of 14 West 10th Street in Manhattan. Her husband, Fred G. Bartel, was a restaurateur who was seldom home, his work often causing him to work late and spend weekends away. Most notably, Fred ran the Riverboat Restaurant, which was once located in the Empire State Building.
Ooh, cool.
Jan found that Fred could be difficult, a companion at times. He was actually a World War II veteran, and he suffered from PTSD, so he was prone to outbursts. But by all accounts, Jan herself was rather difficult. Her neighbors said that she was, quote, spoiled and neurotic, and she also suffered from clinical depression. I suppose that they were well-suited in their brokenness. There was little to be done for depression in the 1950s and 60s, yeah. And the condition absolutely colored Jan's writing. So when you read things that she's written, poetry, this book, you can absolutely tell that she suffered from depression because it bled into everything that she ever created. It is also believed that she attempted suicide on more than one occasion, although this is pure speculation. There is no definitive proof that she actually did commit suicide at the end either. I did a lot of extensive research and tried to find her death certificate.
Mm-hmm.
I did actually find a death certificate for Fred G. Bartel. He actually passed away in the last home that they lived in together, but I didn't find anything for Jan. So, interestingly enough, Jan possessed psychic abilities.
Ooh.
But the presence of these abilities only amplified her anxiety once the activity in her home began to escalate. So her attempts to understand exactly what was happening were fruitless, and she even called in self-appointed psychic expert and ghost hunter Hans Holzer to find some sort of peace or resolution.
Mm-hmm.
If Holzer's name rings a bell, it absolutely should. He actually investigated the Amityville Horror House with Ethel Johnson Myers in 1977. And he's also written over 140 books on the paranormal and the unexplained.
Holy shit.
So he's quite the haunted aficionado. He's also considered an expert in his field. So
I feel like people who don't have any ability to actually psychically connect or be like empathic, they are like, oh, that'd be so cool. It ain't.
Right? Yeah. No. It's never cool.
No.
It's usually very uncomfortable.
Yes.
Yeah. So Holzer also wrote a nonfiction book about the Amityville Horror House titled Murder in Amityville, published in 1979. This actually formed the basis for the 1982 film Amityville 2, The Possession. He also wrote two novels titled The Amityville Curse, published in 1981, the year I was born.
Ooh.
And The Secret of Amityville, published in 1985. In the end, Holzer was unable to silence or dispel the spirits in the house, and all of Jan's attempts to find peace ended in failure, and only added to her distress. So, from the NewYorkPost.com, quote, the strange occurrences started out small, a sound of footsteps following her up the stairs, a brush against the back of her neck, even when her hair was tied up, a strange rotting smell that would seemingly come and go like wispy smoke.
Ugh.
Yeah. Things got darker. Shadows that no light would touch. A mysterious chair that their dog would snarl and growl at as if it contained some invisible enemy. Then a phantom shriveled grape appeared in the dead center of a clean dinner plate, even though the couple hadn't bought grapes in months.
I feel like that's too specific to make up. Like, those things, you know what I mean? Like, people are like, oh, that's not really, like, that's too specific for someone to be like, you know what, I'm going to make up something that happened. It's a grape.
Well, it's really interesting, too, because the random appearance of a grape, okay? First of all, it's a shriveled grape.
Mm.
So, technically, it's a raisin.
I was thinking that.
Let's get that straight. It's a raison, yeah. That by classification, it is a raisin. But it reminded me of, in the case of the Stratford knockings, they would actually find a potato.
Oh.
Just randomly find a potato and be like, what the fuck? Where did this potato come from? And they would, like, take it and throw it away or, like, put it back. And then it would appear in the same place again. So, yeah, I don't know. There's something about food and hauntings, I guess. But, yeah, it was a phantom potato and now it's a strange raisin.
Yes.
I don't know. She found furniture inexplicably moved from its usual place. the sound of crashing glass would chase her around the building.
That'd be terrifying.
So, like, she'd literally run from room to room, and all she could hear was glass crashing around her.
And people wonder why she's stressed.
Yeah, right?
Like...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. People, she's like, people wonder why I'm stressed. I'm, like, constantly having phantom glass smashed around me.
And Jesus then there's Christ. That grape.
And that raisin. Fucking random raison.
That's just like, no one knows what I'm dealing with.
That raisin randomness, yeah. So, most unsettling were the odors that appeared out of nowhere. So, one of them was rather fragrant, was described as an ancient perfume. So I'm picturing something that's very much like spice or root based.
See, I was thinking of like frankincense, or patchouli.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
some nice patchouli.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, no, there's nothing nice about patchouli. That's I mean, let's true. Be honest.
Pretty intense aroma.
Right. Yeah. No. I pictured something like something you'd grind in like a mortar and pestle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then, like, mix with oil and, like, dab that behind your ears. You know, totally. Something, yeah, something really fragrant. The other was a, quote, rotting miasma that was offensive. So apparently it literally smelled like something, like an animal or a human, was rotting under the floorboards.
Ew.
Yeah, quite gross. That smell, is actually, it's very strange. When decay begins, it has like kind of a sweet, like a sickeningly sweet aroma. Like when all the fats and stuff start to break down. I used to work in a funeral home, so I kind of sort of know what it smelled like. But yeah, it's very strange and it's very unnerving because even if you don't know what it is, you know that it ain't right.
Yeah. Evolutionarily, like, we're probably programmed to be like, this is bad.
You're like, oh, bad. Yep. Smells like sweet meats under the floorboards. Ew. No good. No good. No bueno. All right. One day, so she smells this really bad smell, and the vision of a man appeared, and she reached out to touch it. So she says, quote, "What was it I touched? A substance without substance, chilly, damp, diaphanous as marsh mist or a cloud of ether. I could feel my fingers freeze at the tips. They were numb and yet they tingled. In the split second between contact and recoil, the scent came, fragile and languorous and sweet, unbearably, cloyingly sweet."
That is very descriptive. Like, you totally feel like you're there.
That is the language in her book.
Yeah, I can see how that's going to be something you have to read a bit and then
so
pause.
It's going to be a bit of a stumble.
Yeah.
it'll be a bit of a struggle bus. But I'll power through it. Now, when I read this, I found myself flashing back to Edgar Allan Poe's The Telltale Heart.
Oh, yeah.
And I wonder if there isn't, like, a festering organ somewhere underneath the floor. Like, did somebody put an animal under the floorboards?
Yeah, my grandmother, two separate times, she had, like, a mouse die in like, one of her walls at her house. And, like, just depending on, like, the wind and a whole bunch of things, sometimes you could smell it and sometimes you couldn't. And, like, I just...
When the wind's blowing just the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully, I personally never smelled it.
Yeah, I mean, it literally could have been anything from, you know, a smell that was coming in from outside. They lived on the top floor. They were probably close to an attic space. Maybe there was an animal dead there. And just the way that maybe it was just so powerful a smell that it smelled like it was coming from everywhere. Yeah. Maybe there was something dead under the floorboards.
Also, like, it could be like, been like a residual smell. Like, sometimes your memory, your memory links something to a scent and you're thinking something and then you can almost smell it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I find myself sometimes, I suffer from anxiety.
Oh, yeah.
And I take medication for anxiety. We're very open on this podcast about, like, mental illness and,
Oh, yeah.
you know, accepting people that struggle with mental illness. I like to talk about it because I feel like if I found my way through it, then I can maybe help other people find their way through it. So I think it's a good vessel, basically. But yeah, I mean, I often find that I'll smell something that I smelled at one point in my childhood, maybe.
Yeah.
That caused me to be anxious.
Yeah, triggering.
The smell of a certain brand of cigarettes mm-hmm. will, like, hit me just right. And I'll be like, oh, God. And I just can't. I have to go somewhere else and just be by myself for a bit because I need to process it. So, I mean, smells can be very powerful for people.
Oh, definitely.
And they can absolutely dredge up those memories.
Oh, yeah. Like, the first girl that I loved, she had this, like, the Britney Spears, like, you know, her pink perfume? Like, that was, like, in the, like, with, like, the little white dots on it?
Yep.
Like, I still can't, like, if I smell that...
I remember that smell. Oh,
I can't. I have to leave the area. It was... I can't do it, because it was just like, nope. Do you want me to cry? Do you want me to cry? Keep it here. Otherwise, that needs to go away, or I'm going to go away. So I totally get that.
Yeah.
Like, memory and scent are so highly linked that, mm-hmm. yeah, it's just part of me. I wish I could just sit down and talk with her more about it. Like, be like, huh, like, psychoanalyze a bit. Just be like, interesting. So.
Tell me more.
Yes.
Yeah.
What else?
So, in 1973... social and economic changes began to affect their neighborhood. That's generally what happens. You move into a neighborhood and then the economy shifts or goes in the toilet. Yeah. And then, you start to see a lot of different faces in your neighborhood because it's considered a lower income area or it's considered a higher income area. And all of a sudden you're the lower income person. So yeah, I mean, it's just something that happens. Jan and Fred, they decided to move out of that apartment, and they settled into a home in New Rochelle, New York. Some say that Jan committed suicide in the bathroom of that house on June 18th, 1973, prior to the publication of her book. Others say that she died of a heart attack. That was the information that I found. But regardless, she passed away. She was only 51 years old. Fred went on to manage other restaurants in New York, and he passed away on September 8th, 1980, in New Rochelle. Through additional research, I did find that Frank Bartel actually passed away on April 1st, 1978. Oh. Now, I don't know if that was a different Fred G. Bartel
New
Rochelle. It's possible. But yeah, so it was a little bit of conflicting information. As far as other residents that lived at this place,
like Mark Twain,
I'm gonna talk a little bit about. There's not really actually a lot of information about when Mark Twain lived there.
Maybe as you read the book, something.
But else. Yeah, I wanted to read just a little bit of it, and of course, you know, try not to read too much of it and get hit with a copyright infringement something. I had entered upon another way to live in the world, a frightening, frustrating dimension in which I was a helpless alien, more helpless even than the normal world I carelessly inhabited, preoccupied, sighted, and yet unseeing. The strain began to work on me. Even on the coolest days, lozenges of sweat clung to the fine hairs of my forehead. A pulse in my head rebelled from the fierce effort and pounded viciously. And the bruises that I had collected from falls and sharp-edged bumps seemed to spread and merge into one big purple pulp.
Ew.
Even Penny was showing signs of exhaustion, that's her dog. Through it all, in her devoted doggy way, she had trotted Indian fashion behind me, bewildered by my antics and so fearful for my safety that time and again I had felt her cold, wet nose against my heel, nudging it away from mishap. After a week of this halting, self-inflicted hell, I began to feel blind. One afternoon, just as I had finished my tea and cigarette break and was beginning to go around and around the dining table in the tower room, I felt a cold stir like a breeze circulating around my ankles. In a little bit, it rose to the height of my chest, then my shoulders. I felt myself going goose pimply, and I thought, the window, go to close the window as soon as I take off this blindfold. And around I went willing myself into the personality of Rowane, young, sensitive, and blind. I was no longer on West 10th Street, but on the fog-bound coast of England. Victoria was on the throne, suet pudding on the stove, men wore walrus mustaches and gallant airs, women wore whalebone and layers of things that rusted and went swish. So that's just a little bit of it. But it's, yeah, I mean, it's pretty dense.
I have to give her a hug. She sounds so sad.
She needs a hug. She just needs
like,
a hug.
I just want to be like, it'll be okay. Need a hug, man?
Yeah, so it's 253 pages.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't often do this, but I was compelled to read the very last line.
Ooh, yeah, that's
a bold move. The very last line is, if the spindrift has not reached you yet, it will. It will. And it ends on an ellipsis.
Ooh.
So, if you want something real good to read during the spooky season.
Oh my gosh, I may have to borrow that one.
Spindrift is, yeah, it Spindrift is, I think it's a good one. I think it's a good one.
Have you read the story, like, Turn of the Screw?
I believe I have.
Oh my gosh, that a one long time gets me. Ago. It's more of a short story, but oh, that one always gets me.
Yeah. Yeah, The Yellow Wallpaper.
Oh my god, the
that one freaks me out.
Oh, yes.
And also, Edgar Allan Poe's Hop Frog.
I don't think I've read that one.
If you've never read that, go home and Google it. It is fabulous.
Maybe I'll wait until people are around.
If you want to be spooked out, that's a good one. All right, so some other residents that lived at 14 West 10th Street. As we well know, one haunting does not a haunted hotspot make.
For sure.
So, for your consideration, some other haunted and unnerving occurrences. So, a man known only as Dennis said that he lived in the house for several years and also experienced paranormal activity, such as lights going on and off, and, quote, little clips and visions of women in long gowns going from room to room.
Mm-hmm.
So, full-figured apparitions. Dennis was a photographer and a musician and would often invite women to his apartment to photograph them. Now, okay, so let me just say that Dennis sounds like a little bit of a creep.
Yeah, I'm about to say, like, maybe he just wanted there to be women. Like, he's like...
I read that and I was like, you want to... Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, you want to photograph them? Right. That's what you want to do.
Uh-huh.
Sure, Dennis. Sure. Sure, quote-unquote Dennis.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That's really the name.
If that's your real name. So, he said on more than one occasion that the women would run out upon seeing a woman in a long, flowing black dress followed by a cat.
Ooh, is it a black cat?
I am assuming it would be a black cat, but I don't know.
It's probably a witch in her family.
I mean, you would think. You would think it would be black. So, is anyone else having a hard time believing that the women were running from a ghost and not from Dennis himself? I mean, really? Like, he's a quote-unquote photographer? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, anyway. Activity has been reported at the location as recently as a few years ago.
Oh.
So, another name that our listeners might find familiar is Joel Steinberg. He was a disbarred New York criminal defense attorney who attracted international media attention when he was convicted of manslaughter after he beat his adopted daughter to death at the location in November of 1987.
Aww.
Yeah. Hedda Nussbaum, an author of children's books who was employed by Random House, watched as Steinberg beat 6-year-old Lisa Steinberg to the ground while under the influence of crack cocaine. Nussbaum was not charged in the killing. Apparently, the couple had illegally adopted Lisa after Steinberg had been asked to find a suitable home for the child. Oh. So instead of doing that, he actually took the child home and raised her with Nussbaum. Yeah.
That's not cool.
No. So, as of 2006, Steinberg maintained his innocence. So, I have a little bit of the article here from the New York Times. Joel Steinberg was sentenced to anywhere from 8 to 25 years in a state prison in the death of 6-year-old Lisa Steinberg, the girl that he helped raise. The penalty was the maximum he could have received, and the judge said that he would recommend strongly against parole. Steinberg received the sentence without any sign of emotion, except for slumping slightly in resignation at what he knew was coming. Before the sentence was imposed, Steinberg, sounding like the lawyer that he was until his disbarment, addressed the bench at first dispassionately, almost clinically, going over bits of evidence presented in the trial, and then moving into a rambling monologue about Lisa's death and his role in her life. By the end, his voice was breaking, although he said that he felt no remorse because he had not caused her death. Quote, I feel the pain every day, he told the judge. It's my loss. I'm a victim, as was everyone else who knew Lisa. When police first entered the home, they found Lisa beaten into unconsciousness. She died of a brain hemorrhage in hospital four days later. Police also found another of Steinberg and Nussbaum's children, quote, tethered to a playpen by a length of rope. And the clothing of the child and the mattress on which he was sitting were covered in urine.
So I'm going to say, my BSO meter is going off on his hole.
It wasn't me. Yeah, it wasn't me. Yeah, no. It was absolutely him. Leanna Renee Heiber, author of Eterna and Omega, writes, tucked within a famed high-end real estate area where most of the gorgeous townhouses have stately stoops climbing to glorious first floors, 14 descends down below the sidewalk before you, as does the energy of the building dropping off sharply. Just walking by it gave me a sinking, troubled, pressed, and fraught sense. The sense that the building is, in and of itself, a distinctly negative presence, and that something is deeply wrong there. And then she goes on to call it the Manhattan version of Amityville.
Oh.
So, truly, there is a darkness cast over this location. It's reported that as many as 44 murders are said to have occurred there, and it seems as if the paranormal tales are not going to stop anytime soon. As of right now, the house has been cut up into 10 separate apartments, but apparently the spooky vibe still lingers. So my question to you is, would you spend the night?
I'm going to say no.
No, you wouldn't?
How much money do I get?
You get to say that you stayed in a profoundly haunted location.
Then definitely not. Like, if it could pay off a student loan or something, I'd freaking, like, live there for a year. But right. For just like, oh, I did it, nah.
Well, nah. I mean, you know, consider, if you stayed there, you would get all the fucking raisins you could eat.
This is true.
I mean, there's a never-ending font of raisins.
Yes.
Somewhere in that building.
This is true. I'll go on a quest to find the raisin location and that's the apartment I'll stay in.
Yeah, no potatoes. If there were potatoes,
that'd be totally different. Totally, I'm Irish, man.
I would like, be I there. Would,
yeah.
With bells on.
Yeah.
I would be there.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, no potatoes, just raisins.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's Jan Bryant Berteau. All right, guys. Well, I think we are done for the time being. We're actually going to slip into, I guess, an area of hibernation now for winter hiatus. So you're actually not going to hear from us again until sometime in January, probably the middle of January. If you want to go back and listen to past episodes, absolutely go and do that. There's a lot to binge. There's two whole seasons.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, do it. Do it to it.
Download it now.
Well, make sure you subscribe.
Subscribe, yes.
Yeah, make sure you subscribe. And make sure you do what?
5-star rating.
Leave a 5-star review on iTunes, please. We would appreciate it so much. All right, so that is it for us. The happiest of Halloweens, the spookiest of all souls days. Happy Dia de los Muertos to people who celebrate. And yeah, we will see you next time. I'll
Thank you, Cool Teddy Dad.
And as always, guys, stay spooky. So when I die, I want to be laid out in the finals. I want a black sport coat there, Stetson hat. I want a $20 gold piece on my watch chain, so the boys will know that I died standing pat. I went down to St. James Infirmary. You know I saw my baby there. Oh, she was stretched out on that long table.